Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and you are at the intersection of sexuality and religion, where it meets at LGBTQ Avenue and LDS Street. We want to thank you for joining us for this, another Latter Gay Stories podcast episode. Thank you for giving us an hour of your time to better understand this experience. And we want to welcome you if you're listening on an audio version of the podcast through one of our podcast players. Hello, especially to those who are listening now on the Amazon Prime Podcast Network. Thanks to the many listeners and the success of the Latter Gay Stories podcast, Amazon has picked up the podcast as part of their podcast lineup. So if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, we invite you to listen to the podcast on Amazon. Some kind of cool perks there for you. And if you are listening on a traditional player like Spotify, iHeartMedia, Apple, Google, or others, we invite you to subscribe to the channel as well, because you will catch podcast episodes like this just a touch sooner than those who are watching on the video version. So that's kind of a perk. If you do click that subscribe button on the podcast player that you are listening to, you will also be informed every time we release a new episode. If you are watching on a video version, there's a cool perk for you as well, and that is the live comment feature. Whether you catch this as a live broadcast or after we premiere it, there is a community of people who are interacting right now on this episode. So we invite you to join that discussion as well, to ask questions of our guest, to have a dialogue between other people who are listening, or just give your general feelings and thoughts on this particular episode. So that's kind of a fun feature as well on our Facebook and YouTube channels. Again, if you haven't subscribed on the YouTube channel as well, we invite you to do that. Not only does subscribing put you first in line for interviews like this, but it also helps us to expand our reach. The more subscribers we have to our YouTube channel, it's pretty simple, the more YouTube will send content like this out. And more content means that we are able to build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and LGBTQ community. It allows us to better understand these experiences. So that is why we always ask for you to press that subscribe button, whether it's on our YouTube channel, click like on our Facebook page, or one of our social media channels, outlets as well, like Instagram or one of the podcast players. So that's a little housekeeping. I do want to welcome another fantastic guest to the podcast. Excited to have Nate here to share his story. Nate Gardner, married man, Utahn, typical Latter-day Saint, and we'll kind of go through that story of young gay Mormon kid growing up in a world of straights, navigating that journey kind of on, in many times on your own. Nate, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for giving us an opportunity to better understand your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's first let the audience get to know a little bit more about Nate, a more 40,000 foot view. What do you do for a living? Tell us a little bit more about yourself, and then we'll jump into your story.
Sure. So I am primarily a life coach. And I really love working specifically with the gay community, helping them to overcome boundaries that they're facing. I'm also a massage therapist. I've been doing that for about 10 years. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, that's what I do for work. I was born and raised in Utah, in Bountiful, Utah, for until I was about 15. And then we moved to Pleasant Grove and finished out my teenage years there. And I served a mission and got a bachelor's degree at BYU, and then came out of the closet a few years after that. And just like you said, I'm a married gay man with my husband, and we've been married almost 3 years now. And so that's kind of a quick overview.
In typical Latter Gay Stories fashion, we will take our audience through kind of a story of chronology, the beginning, the middle of your story, and then what the future looks like. But with your interview today, Nate, I want to do something a little bit different. I want to have you start with a story that you shared with me that just happened this previous Christmas. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a little bit unique in the terms of the way we format the interviews, but I think this is a great place to start with your story. So let's take the audience to Utah County, December 2022.
Okay, cool, cool. So my parents live in Utah County. My husband and I live in the Salt Lake area. And we were figuring out, my husband and I were figuring out what we wanted to do for Christmas. So we wanted to spend it with my parents. And so I was on the phone with my dad. We were figuring out plans of if we wanted to sleep over Christmas Eve and be there Christmas morning, or if we wanted to drive home. And I was just like, you know, if we're going to be there both days, we might as well just sleep over. So we were figuring out plans of the next day on Sunday. And he was like, so just so you know, Christmas this year is on a Sunday. I'm like, yeah. But I already knew that. And he's like, and your mother and I are planning on going to church. I was like, yeah, I know you guys go to church. and he said, what's, and it's only an hour long because it's on Christmas. Like, okay. It's like, and what's really cool is that it's just basically like an open mic style. So people come up and they say what their favorite Christmas hymn is in the hymn book. They give the number and then explain why it's their favorite. And then they sit down and we sing it. So basically it's just an hour of carol singing, Christmas carol singing. I'm like, is my dad inviting me to church?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. And then I'm like, okay. Yeah, that's great. And I really started warming up at that point, actually, truthfully, because my dad's a musician, I'm a musician. Our whole family is really heavily musically involved. And the thing that I miss the most about the Mormon church is the music. And so I'm like, that actually kind of sounds fun, because at least it's Christmas music and not like Praise to the Man or anything like that. So and he said, and the last thing is that I'm playing the organ. I'm like, okay, cool. Because my dad is like a wizard at the organ. He's incredible. It's like going to conference, you know, every week with listening to his prelude and postlude. So I'm like, I talked to my husband. I'm like, I think it's important that we go support dad and we go to church. And he's like, okay, yeah, let's do it. So we wake up Christmas morning. I walk into the church building with my husband on my right side and my mother on my left side. And I started hyperventilating. My whole body tensed up. I was like, what am I doing? Why am I here? And my husband was like, are you okay? I'm like, I think so. I'll be fine. And then I was just like, it's okay. My mom is here. She will protect me. And quite honestly, she really did. Everybody knows my mom in her ward. She is a saint and she's an angel. And she creates such a safe space for everybody, including the people who don't really feel like they belong. And so many people came up. They're like, Mary, how are you? Merry Christmas. How are you doing? Is this your family? And she said, yes, this is my family. This is my son, Nathan, and his husband, Wilson. That was so big to me, for me, because she was risking the social fallout of her ward members, her neighbors. Like, I have a gay son and I love him and he's here at church with me. And it's so interesting how when people don't know how to react in social situations, they just follow the lead. And my mom was leading. My mom was teaching people how to respond in situations like that. And every single person that came up to her and asked, is this your family? It happened, like, I think four or five people introduced themselves, and they're like, oh, so nice to meet you. Welcome. Thank you for being here. You know, every single one was a positive experience because she showed them how to do it.
Do you think that's something that your mom had done before, or just having you there gave her that push to show off her family?
She's done it before. She's done it before. I can't remember when or who she was talking to, but she was talking to another lady, another sister in the ward, and she was just like, I think every mother deserves a gay son. Like, they're so awesome and wonderful and helpful. And she's just like, I have a wonderful relationship with him. And she didn't always feel that way, you know, especially when I was younger. But over time, as I have figured out who I am, I'm able to share myself in a more authentic way with her and the rest of my family. And because I'm able to give more authentically, and it's not just this facade that I had been building my whole life, they are able to respond in the same way. And I'm closer to my family now than I ever was when I was going to church.
Do you think that little Latter-day Saint Chapel was a better place on Christmas morning because you and your husband were there, and because your mom took those steps to be visible and to advocate in a very loving way?
I think so. It gave other people opportunity, the exposure to gay people that they probably don't get in Utah County. And to just realize that a Mormon mother can be proud of her gay son.
You said that it hasn't always been this way. Let's go through your life story.
Sure.
Because I'd like to understand how we got from Christmas sacrament meeting with your parents and your husband. How did we get there to where the gardeners were proud of their son and their son-in-law? At what point did you realize you were different?
I knew I was different when I was pretty young. I was kind of the typical little white boy, like baby gay. Like, I always played with my sister's Barbies and none of the trucks, none of the G.I. Joe figures. I would always want to wear my sister's dresses instead of the pants. Pants are horrible. And I was just such a happy kid, you know, like, I knew that that wasn't what I was supposed to like, but it didn't really matter because I was just happy, smiling. Like, I had a great childhood when I was little. And I knew I was different because I knew I was supposed to be friends with the boys, but all of my friends were girls because I had more feminine energy. I just resonated with them more. I liked talking with them, and instead of playing sports, sports had no interest. I had no interest in sports. And so, but it didn't really become a problem, like a concern for me, until I hit puberty. And then the whole sexuality component started coming in for me at that time. And also at that time, we got a new computer in the house. And what came along with the new computer? The internet. And so that
humans with fewer clothing, with less clothing on.
Exactly. And so, you know, my parents, I'm pretty sure they paid top dollar for the firewalls and to, like, keep the pornography out of the house, but, like, leave it to a 12-year-old to find the loopholes, you know, like, it didn't take very long. And so it was really fascinating to me, like observing myself almost with the pornography, because when there were females, when there were naked women, I couldn't handle it. It like I had earth-shattering amounts of pressure, amounts of guilt, just guilt. All I couldn't, like, this was wrong. This was bad. It did nothing for me. It was just bad in every way. But when I saw men, there was still an element of guilt there, but there was this intense excitement and like, this is exciting. I was drawn to it. Like, this is really, like, I don't even have words for it. There were no words for it at that point in time. And so it was just this interesting thing where I couldn't, the guilt was so intense looking at naked women. It was like I was looking at my friends naked, or my sisters, or like my mom. It was that kind of an intense guilt that I just wanted nothing to do with that.
Do you think it, I mean, I think we can all speculate why that was, but I've had people sit in this, that very seat throughout episodes and attribute that to early Latter-day Saint teachings about the protection of the woman, the fidelity of the body, and that was the reason why you felt those things, not because you felt a symbiotic relationship with sexuality. Mm. It was that you felt that as a result of the church's good teachings about chastity.
You know, that reminds me. There's like, you know how the young men and the young women have a mantra, have like a saying. And I remember every week when I was a kid, when I was a deacon or a teacher, every Sunday we would like recite this thing. I can't remember hardly any of it, but as you're saying that, the very end of it was, and give proper respect to women, girls, and children. And I always thought in my mind, always, always, what about men? You know? And it's like, so men can be objectified and they can handle it, but then just women can't, you know? And so I think that was probably an element to it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So what do you do with that? Here you are, this deacon or teacher, young, ironic priesthood holding Latter-day Saint who has ventured to the other side of the aisle in a way. Mm-hmm. Do you tell anybody? Do you bring that up with your parents? Do you have a discussion with church leaders? Or how do you internalize those feelings?
Yeah. You know, one thing really quick. As I was looking, searching the internet for pornography, there was this word that kept coming up that I didn't quite understand what it was or what it meant. And I didn't really click on it because I didn't know what it was, but eventually it kept coming up. So I'm like, okay, I'll click on it. And when I clicked on it, it was men being intimate with other men. It was the word gay. Like, I didn't even know, like, sexually what that word even meant until I was looking at pornography on the internet. It just, like, I just feel like, I just kind of feel bad that I wasn't given all the tools necessary to be able to understand my own experience at that age. And I had to, it was a pretty rude awakening, you know, to figure all that out of, like, okay, so that's obviously what I want because it's creating this awesome feeling inside of me that I like. But that's not what I'm supposed to have. So I am gay, but that's bad because I'm supposed to like women. But how can you have sex with women? Like that seems so inherently wrong, you know? And so it was just this, it was really, really difficult to navigate. And so to answer your question, I told my parents when I was like 13 or something, they ask you the interview questions, the worthiness questions to be ordained a deacon at 12. I can't remember exactly when I told them, so long ago. But I told my parents that I'm masturbating, I'm looking at pornography, and the pornography is of men. And they're like, what percentage is it men to women? And I'm like, 95% men.
And 100%.
And 100. And so, and I told my bishop, like everybody knew when I was young. And my parents, I knew that they loved me and I knew that I could trust them and tell them that information. And, they just said, okay, we're gonna figure this out. Essentially, they said, we're gonna fix this. Even though I don't know if they said those words exactly. And so they put me into therapy pretty quick. Went to therapy at a decently young age.
Let's just talk about that therapy real fast.
Yeah.
LDS Family Services, was this a specialized therapist that was working to overcome sexuality via like conversion therapy? Let's just talk about that routine.
Yeah. It was pretty mild conversion therapy. It was just regular CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy. So it wasn't like hardcore rehab conversion therapy. I never did any of that. Thank God. But I think, yeah, I was in and out of LDS Family Services, social services. But I think my parents could tell that like there was definitely a different quality of therapy. Not all therapists are created equal. And so I did end up with one therapist who was actually pretty good. Like I do have good, I think I benefited from that therapy, even though there was this huge undertone of trying to make me straight the whole time. It was good for me to have a therapist to talk to in a safe space where I could just say everything and let it out and know that I wasn't being judged. And it's just at that point in time, I wanted to be straight. I would have done anything to be straight. I wanted to be there probably more than my parents wanted me to be there. So yeah, I didn't officially stop therapy till I was like in my mid-20s. So over a decade of therapy.
When did you officially stop being gay?
Never.
Oh, so the therapy, the conversion therapy didn't work.
Not quite.
Well, like in all good Mormon goals, maybe your therapist just didn't try hard enough. Maybe you just didn't listen enough. Maybe your knees weren't calloused and your knuckles weren't bloody enough.
I think as intense as it got was he printed out the female anatomy and just put it on a piece of paper and put it next to me on the couch. Just so it was in my peripheral vision. Like, I don't like this. This is stupid. Why are we doing this? So that's, it's interesting, you know, what people come up with that they think is actually going to convert people. But yeah, we'll just blame the therapist. That's a good idea.
So as the therapy waned, because I mean, clearly if, and I completely understand what you're talking about in terms of having a connection to a therapist. Yes, like some of the content that you will discuss with a therapist may not resonate 100%, but there are other aspects of therapy that I think are incredibly beneficial. Anything, I mean, just one thing aside, if you can just have someone to speak to, just having a confidant, just having someone who can sit with you in empathy, yeah, and just can hold space for you, can do so much. Often we think that we have to have all of the answers to questions and that we have to know exactly how to suck or run to somebody in their need. But really, often the role of the therapist is just to listen and to and to allow us to walk through. So I completely understand what your experience was like. I'm just curious, like what happens in the down the road? Because after these therapy sessions over a course of time, you realize like I'm still hella gay. I'm not going to un-gay myself. Mm-hmm. Does therapy give you a chance to then begin to become okay with your sexuality? Does it unlock doors to rid yourself of some internalized homophobia? Does it allow you to become more confident in yourself?
My journey for me personally, it was through life coaching that helped me. I started seeing a coach. I love you, Deanna Dansky. You are an angel. And she would tell me story after story of her gay brother and how he's married and how they were starting their family together, you know, her brother and his husband. So it was really important for me to do a different style of mental health that kind of jived with me, because for me personally, I was never suicidal. I never was. And I was never hardcore depressed. Like, I was never medicated for any. Super funny side note. My therapist told me to go to my medical doctor to get SSRIs so that it would kill my libido so I wouldn't masturbate so much. I believed him, so I did it. And I was like, no, what am I doing? This is stupid. And so I stopped taking it, but it was like, took a while for my libido to come back, and it sucked. And I'm like, what am I doing here, you know? And so I wasn't in, like, I mean, I know there were times when I probably was kind of drowning and it was good for me to have therapy. But at that point in my life, when I was ready to come out of the closet, I felt like what coaching could provide for me that was more like future based and more like goal setting and more like not just getting to a survival state, but a thriving state was really important for me. And it really helped me out a lot.
Let's talk about that coming out experience and what finally caused you to cross the threshold to grab a hold of the handle and make an entrance into the world.
Yeah. So I, in context, the reason why we moved to Pleasant Grove was because my dad left a position in the church office building to become a professor at BYU. And so I applied to BYU, and even though I had subpar grades, I still got accepted. Thanks, Dad. And so that was kind of difficult for me to, that's what I thought that I wanted, you know, to have prayer before my biology class. And like, that I'm proving to God that I'm faithful and I'm going to BYU and I'm not going to be gay anymore. And then I went on a mission. And then came back, and I was so angry when I came back from my mission. I was like, God, what more do you want from me? You know, like, I gave you 2 years of my life. That actually was probably the darkest time of my life. That's when I was drowning the most, was on my mission. And they did have LDS social services up there in Alberta. And if it wasn't for that awesome therapist up there, then I would have gone home early, which really wouldn't have been that big of a deal, but it would have been a big deal at the time. But I served the full 2 years. And when I came back, I was kind of angry. And I was kind of like, there's got to be something different. Like, I can't really do this anymore. And there was a friend of a friend who I knew was gay, and he was finishing his last semester at BYU. And I knew he was out, but he was just kind of keeping things under wraps until he got his degree. And when he graduated, we started talking more often. And he's like, Nate, why don't you just come up to Salt Lake City? We can show you the city. We can show you what it's like. We can take you to your first club. You know, you no pressure. You know, you don't have to drink. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. But just come up and hang out with us for a little bit with him and his boyfriend. I'm like, okay. Well, I was pretty naive. And I didn't know what was happening. But basically, these two guys were grooming me the whole night. And there was significant amounts of peer pressure to do things that I had mixed feelings about. And I didn't know, like, they were laying it out thick, you know, like, basically come do a three-way with us. And I, out of curiosity and nervousness, I'm like, okay, let's see what this is about. Let's try it out. And the amounts of guilt afterwards, because I really wasn't ready for it at that point in time, it wasn't good for me. The timing was not right. And so that negative experience, I basically told myself, if this is what the gay community is like, then I want nothing to do with it. And so I scared myself back into the church for another 2 years. And the same feelings kept coming back, you know, of just like, can I keep doing this? Can I keep doing this? But at least it's better than what I thought the gay community was. But my friend who had just come out of the closet as well, we went to high school together. We went to college together. We were super close. He's like, let me take you out to lunch, Nate. And so we were talking and he's like, can I just tell you like a little bit about this guy that I'm dating? I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he showed me a picture of this guy. And he was like one of the most gorgeous men I've ever seen, ever. Like this picture, like I basically immediately fell in love with this man just by seeing a picture of him. And I was like, ooh, what just happened here? I was like, okay, if I am married to a woman, if I have children, and I have that kind of visceral reaction just seeing a picture of someone, like, I can't do this. I can't stay in the church. I can't fulfill the measure of my creation, you know? Like, that's not... Let's try the gay community again and see if it's different than what I thought it was. And that's when the timing was right for me. And it was, I was still nervous. I was still scared. It was still really uncomfortable, but the timing was right and it made sense.
How do you walk? I think this is really interesting space for so many who will listen to this episode who are sitting at BYU right now or who are listening from the darkness of their closet, looking for that opportunity to go out. What aside from photographic lust that you had, how do you find strength to do that? What advice would you give to somebody who listens to that portion of your story? What advice do you give to say it's okay to take those steps forward?
You aren't going to have all the answers moving forward. One thing that I really still appreciate about the religious teachings of my childhood is faith. You got to take a leap of faith. If it feels right and it feels like who you are, then that is how God made you. That is how you were created. And so Knowing that you are exactly who you need to be right now. You don't need to be anything or anyone else. And whatever makes the most sense for you right now is the right answer. It's like, it's not a matter of trying to find the right path. The fact of existing means that you are the right path. You are your path. And so you can't ever stray off the path or go down a wrong path, because it's all your journey. It's all your experience. And that's okay to make mistakes.
That makes a lot of sense to me. A few years ago, I interviewed Josh and Lolly Weed after they had announced that they were divorcing, which took Mormonism by storm, because they were in all versions of the words. They were the poster children of successful mixed orientation marriages within Mormonism. And Lolly said something that has stuck with me all of these years. And she said, "I cannot be held responsible for knowing what I didn't know." And I think about that often, that so many of us cannot be held responsible for not knowing the things that we don't know today. And we can always look back in hindsight and say, yeah, this should have been done differently. Or if I would have taken this road as opposed to that road, the outcome would have been different. But we don't know what we don't know. And the joy of the journey, to borrow a Mormon term, is that we experience, and that we take these Robert Frost paths of least resistance, these uncharted roads, to find our destiny. Yeah. And to experience, and to pluck the fruit from the tree and partake of it, so that we might know.
Amen. Amen.
I want to talk just a second about deconstruction. Because at this point in your life, there seems to be a wide opportunity for deconstruction. Not only the deconstruction of your religious beliefs, but I'm more concerned about deconstruction, or more interested in deconstruction about the gay community, because there were beliefs there that you had to deconstruct, but also to deconstruct who and what I am. Sometimes people who, when we have these conversations, they finally get to the point where they realize, I didn't have to sacrifice any of my values or morals to get to where I'm at today. And they think that a lot of those values and morals were inherently associated with or combined with the traditions or religious beliefs of their childhood. So I want to talk a little bit about deconstruction. Did you have to deconstruct any part of Mormonism? And what forms of deconstruction came with your better understanding of the queer community?
Yeah. Okay. Where to begin? I think, just generally speaking, I think that's what adulthood is just deconstructing the programming of our childhood. whether you were born in the church or not, or, you know, there's always programming to deconstruct.
And I think, just a side note too, a lot of our listeners have never been Latter-day Saints and never understood Mormonism, but I think this also applies to any conservative, ultra-Orthodox, high-demand religion as well. It isn't just a Mormonism topic.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I think one of the things that I had to redefine for myself was my relationship with God. It was interesting, when I was in the church, I was really angry at God, but I really appreciated Christ, because at least I was angry at God that he made me gay, and that this was the thorn in my side, if you will. This was the trial that I was given. But I really appreciated the Christ figure, because that's through the atonement, that's what was going to fix everything. I was going to be reborn into a new creature, and that was going to solve all of my problems. And then it was interesting, as I transitioned out of the church and into living a more authentic life, I grew closer to God or the universe. And I was like, so what does Christ have to do with anything now? you know, like, and I'm still currently like figuring out what my relationship is, or if I have a relationship with Christ anymore, because it's like, I don't need to be saved from my sins, you know, like I'm, and what is sin, you know, like how it gets really philosophical and theological there. But I got to redefine how God sees me and how I see myself. And it was a really painful journey, and it was worth every step, because I have this deep self-love that I never thought I could ever have when I was in the closet, because I was creating this facade of who I was supposed to be. But now I can just be who I am. And there's no social danger, you know? It's not like I'm trying to fit in somewhere where I don't belong. I find my own people. I find my tribe, you know? What else was I deconstructing?
I think a great segue into that is the deconstruction of your perception of the gay community.
Yes.
And that great segue is finding your own tribe. There's clearly more than one way to gay.
Yes. There are just as many ways as there are people. You know, it's completely individual. And so I realized that, of course, sex is a part of the gay community, just like it is in almost every community, in the straight community too, you know? And so I realized that my oversimplification of the gay community, of just like, it's all about sex, it really kind of comes from a heteronormative perspective. That's kind of what I was also taught, is that just like all gay people really just care about sex. And it's like, that is so far from the truth. You know, like we're humans too. And we're multifaceted, multidimensional humans that need friendship, that need not just romantic connection, but community connection and all of those things. And we need balance in our lives too, just like everyone else. And so, and with all of that being said, I do see a kind of area in the gay community that is hypersexualized, just like there are straight people who are hypersexualized too, you know? And it's just like, it does exist, but it's that doesn't have to paint the entire picture of the community. And it's like, people who knows why, you know, like they're probably hurting really deeply inside, or maybe they're just kind of kinky. Like, who cares? You know, like that, it just giving people space to live their lives the way they want to goes so far for everybody, regardless of who you are or who they are. You know, it just, like, the big question that I ask some people who still go to the LDS church is, like, how is my lifestyle threatening to you? I'm not barging into your house and performing sodomy in your house. Like, how is me living my life and you living your life threatening to you?
Sometimes I ask the same questions, and sometimes I think that the answer to that is, or a partial answer to that is, that we're a threat to the narrative. There has been a narrative that has been spoken about people like us for many, many, many decades. And if that narrative is incorrect or skewed, what does that say about those who claim prophetic witness, who speak for and in behalf of God? If indeed the narrative about people like you and I that has been promulgated over pulpits and relegated via policy is wrong. And I often think that that's one of the biggest challenges that Latter-day Saint families are running into today at this intersection of religion and sexuality, that they see their sons and daughters, their children, as beautiful, authentic, spiritual, uplifting people, and they're not the things that their church once said about them or continue to say about them. And that dichotomy leads really good families out of their religious pews because they cannot merge or marry the two dichotomies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of, it's a skill to be able to sit well with paradox. Like the concept of duality, you know? It's like, okay, I am a practicing member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and my child is gay. How can I support my child and still go to church at the same time? It's like, I don't know, how do you? You know, like that looks different for everybody. But I know it's possible, you know, and totally doable.
As you venture into this community, not much of a spoiler alert, we know you're married. So you do have to date and you do have to explore into this community. Let's talk about that. Do you date with the Mormon goggles, the upbringing of your youth? How does dating life work as you're deconstructing and navigating? And I'm going to assume clearly making some mistakes.
Ooh, dating was rough. I had zero experience dating because I never did it before the age of 27 when I came out of the closet.
Never did, and we never, especially growing up in Mormonism, were taught how to gay date.
Right.
I think that's a great point to bring up. There were no steak dances where we were invited to do the snowball with and dance with another guy. There were no word activities. There were no mutual opportunities for us to get to know how to explore these territories.
Mm-hmm. I had one girlfriend in high school for a week. It did not last. It was a week. And we're still good friends to this day. It's awesome. Love you, Tanika. So when I, at age 27, I felt like I had the dating experience of a 12-year-old because I did have the dating experience of a 12-year-old, and I made all the wrong mistakes. I fell in love so hard, so fast. Like it was just, and it was so frustrating for me because consciously I could see myself like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? But my heart was so behind and was like trying to catch up to the maturity of my mental maturity. So it was a very steep learning curve. But I figured it out eventually. And it became really fun. It was good. Like I'm super extroverted. And so getting to know people, spending time with people, that's where I'm in my happy place, is when I'm with other people. And so I finally was able to get to know and to be intimate with the people who I wanted to be intimate with. And I could finally fly. It was incredible. That was a stressful and yet very liberating time in my life.
As you're dating, I'm curious how you and your husband eventually meet. I love a good love story.
Sure. So we met on Tinder. Dating apps suck until they work. my husband is Brazilian, and I kind of stopped dating white guys after a while because it just like, I love other cultures and I love other other ways of living life, you know? And I'm like, I'm white enough for the both of us, you know? Like, and I was always drawn to that Latin flair. And so things started real hot and heavy real fast. And it went in a really great direction. And so, we had only been dating for 4 months. And then we got married after dating for 4 months, knew him for six.
Well, see, you didn't abandon all of your Mormon roots. You knew exactly how to do it.
I know.
That's still BYU.
I was like, what are the odds? You know, when I finally deconstruct what marriage is, you know, marriage is totally off the radar. There is no pressure from anyone, not even my parents, to get married, you know, because it's like a completely different dynamic. And then I pull a Mormon card. Yep.
Your husband isn't a Latter-day Saint, though. He's never raised Mormon. What was it like mixing two religious traditions, essentially, to form a more perfect union?
it was very interesting because I always thought that I would want to be with a person who was raised Mormon, because then we would have like shared trauma. We would like understand each other better. But he was raised pretty conservative Baptist in Brazil. And so the trauma is basically the same. It's cool. the religious background was kind of similar. But the one thing that was really different was that he was taught that Mormonism was a cult, that it was like worshiping the devil, that it was Satan stuff. They have like this book that is totally not of God and all this stuff. And when we were first dating, I was like, okay, well, let's go meet the parents, you know? And he was super nervous at the beginning to meet my parents, because he's like, I think in the back of his mind, probably more unconsciously than consciously, he was like, I'm going to go meet devil worshipers, like literally. And so, but of course my parents are super nice and won him over and they love each other. And, so it was an interesting thing that we needed to navigate.
What does the future look like for you and your husband? Often on episodes like this, I like to show that there is life on the other side of the aisle. We both were raised in a tradition, a religious tradition, that said that there is no happiness. There are no spiritual experiences. There is no joy on this side of the aisle. That this is temporary. You're only finding momentary pleasure, but it'll all crash and burn. What does the future look like for the Gardners?
We want to have a family. Both of us love kids, and we want to create a family at some point in the future. Probably not in the near future, but at some point. And it's kind of interesting, because I think it's really important to have a gratitude practice, to be grateful, and how I was taught to express gratitude is through prayer. And so, like, even to this day, when we have dinner together, we pray over our food. And there was this one time I was like, I don't want to pray. And he's like, why not? He's like, because I still pray like a Mormon, because I don't know how else to pray. And he's like, it's okay, I pray like a Baptist. Okay, let's just keep doing what we're doing, you know? And I don't know exactly what the future holds, you know, because it's not what I was raised it was going to look like, you know, like being raised in the Mormon church, you have a rough outline of exactly what things are going to look like. And I don't know what things are going to look like. But I'm excited for it. Yeah.
I'm curious about advice. I usually like to reserve this part of the podcast to opine a little and give some advice from your pew, from your perspective. I first would love for you to share your advice to other Relief Society presidents out there who are similar to the other sister gardeners in the Utah County wards throughout Zion. How do we better become inclusive and more loving to the queer community as Latter-day Saints?
My advice to people, like leaders in the Mormon religion, would be to see what you can learn from people who live life differently than you. I think that what's kind of unfortunately inbred in a lot of the culture of the church is that we have all the answers. We don't want to learn anything of the ways of the world because we will get corrupted, and that is of anything that is outside of the church is of the devil. And it really closes people off from experiencing other people, from experiencing other cultures, different ways of life, different things that can open your mind in a positive way that can 100% bring you closer to God. What can you learn from that person? We can learn something from every human being. And taking a different angle of humility, I really don't like that word. Not the angle of like being walked over and being long suffering and patient at the expense of your emotional health, but just like being teachable. That's a better word. Being teachable from everybody around you, especially from the queer community, we have a lot to share.
What did your parents do right that you would hope other parents in this space could emulate from your experience?
They loved me. And they did their very best. And hindsight is 20/20, of course. I mean, if they were here and you asked them, I'm 99% sure it's safe to assume that if they could go back, they would do it differently. But they didn't need to, because here we are. They did their very best and loved me as hard as they possibly could. And that's all that's necessary. And just taking the next right step, you know, and not having all the answers, but keep moving forward. And that's, and continuing to see me for me and not a product of some community that they think they know about, or that I will lose my identity when I assimilate into the gay community, but really having a relationship with their son. I never went anywhere. I just became more of who I am.
I love that. I love that a lot. What haven't we talked about that you wanted to talk about in this episode?
Also, on this past Christmas Day at church, it wasn't just my mom who said those incredible things. When I was next to my dad, too, someone asked my dad, "Brother Gardner, is this your family?" And he said, "Yes, these are my sons, Nathan and Wilson." I really want to give not just a shout out to my mom, but to my dad too, because I think it can be more difficult for fathers, especially with gay sons, because I don't know what it's like having kids yet. I'm really excited to experience that at some point in the future. But I can see that perspective of wanting to have your children be as happy as they possibly can and really truly believing that this way it creates the most happiness for everybody involved, you know? And for me to choose a different way, for me to choose a different path, I can see how that would be difficult for my parents, especially my dad. And I just want to say to the parents that it's in the most loving possible way I can say, it's not about you. It's about loving your child in the way that they need to be loved, not in the way that you think they need to be loved. I'm so lucky that all five of my siblings and all of my nieces and nephews absolutely adore my husband. And I think the reason why, and almost all of them, most of them go to church every week, very devout Mormons. And I think the recipe for our success in our relationships is that there is a deep sense of love and a deep sense of respect. You can live your life the way you want to, and I am so happy for you, and I will support you. I will go to the farewells. I will go to the baptisms. I will go to the ordinations because they're my family too, and I want to support you in that way. And you can love and support me the way I need to be loved and supported in what I'm doing with my life. That doesn't make sense to you, but our relationship makes sense.
Gosh, I love it. It was just a interview packed full of such great wisdom and beautiful little nuggets of truth that I hope so many will embrace and hold on to. And as we say, implement into our lives for the nourish and strengthening of our bodies.
Yeah. Oh, man. Still in there.
Nate, thank you. Thank you for sitting down and sharing your story and for candidly and in a very vulnerable way unpacking a few years of trauma and many more years of beautiful growth. Yeah.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Now, as we talked about in the beginning of the episode, a lot of our listeners who are watching on Facebook and YouTube will have questions, willing to jump in and answer some of those questions as well if people have direct questions for you.
Yeah, of course.
And maybe we should also, you are a life coach. How do people get a hold of you?
Sure. My website is prideguidecoaching.com.
Prideguidecoaching.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a newer-ish adventure. And I just, coaching, kind of like what I said before, coaching is what helped me get to a thriving level. And I realized everything that it did for me. And so I just felt drawn to learn how to do that myself so that I can turn around and help people through that process that I was helped in coming out of the closet.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things that we talked about today, for me, would not deter or scare me from sending someone over to have those meaningful conversations. And I think a lot of the points that we discussed today are very sound, and they're based on these principles of thriving in your own skin and not just surviving. Sometimes we talk about in this space, we just need to keep people alive, but I want to keep them alive and thriving at the same time.
Exactly.
I want them to be good, decent, kind, thriving members of our community, not only just the queer community, but our community as a whole. So thank you for your contributions to our community, the queer community, but also to the general public as well through that service. Okay. For those of you, again, thank you for giving us an hour of your time. For those of you who are watching on a video version through Facebook or YouTube, we invite you to scroll over to the comment section and click on that and share your thoughts about this episode. If you have a question specifically for Nate, that's a great place. That's the perfect place to type that question or somewhere here in the comment section, and we'll have a meaningful conversation. I'd love to see, hear, and know what your thoughts are about Nate's episode or some of the things we talked about. And again, if you are listening on a podcast player, we invite you to subscribe to this channel and leave us a rating as well. That does help us expand our reach and be more prevalent in more ears. So if you do that for us, we would wildly appreciate it. This podcast can be found everywhere you catch your favorite audio podcasts through Google, Apple, iHeartMedia, on the podcast players through Amazon now, thanks to our many valuable listeners. Again, thank you for sharing a little bit of your time to better understand these experiences, to help us build bigger and stronger bridges, but most importantly, to help people like myself, people like Nate, and people like you continue writing your own Latter-day story.
This episode is a production of Latter Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.